I read somewhere, like a little quote, if you think that printing money solves poverty, then you'll soon believe that printing degrees solve stupidity. Something along those lines.
This episode of Stand Up Business is sponsored by Fluid Asset Management, investment stewards since 1981, and pioneers in foundational financial literacy.
Mark, hi, good morning.
And good morning to you. After a great weekend for South Africa.
It's just too much good news because I don't know whether you noticed, but the JSE is at a record level.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
What do you think it is, Tim? Do you think it's anticipation? Because the JSE is always the present value of future expectations, right?
Yeah. No, precisely. It's interest rates are going to go down around the world and everybody sort of wants to get in before all of that happens. I mean, I always think that the JSE's level, you know, is a bit deceptive because generally speaking, it does go up. Yeah. And the reason it goes up, I think, tell me if I'm wrong, is because of inflation. You know, because strangely enough, corporates are very powerful inflation hedges because they have pricing power. And they put up their prices. You've got no choice but to take them, you know, the vast majority of the companies. Yeah. So they keep track of inflation. So inflation goes up, their income goes up, and their share price goes up. So it's a little bit, you know, a little pinch of salt required here.
Yeah, well, there's that. And it's also really a function of about 10 stocks at most, maybe 3 stocks.
Yes. Okay.
And so we've got a real weighting towards the steers in that market. And a question someone asked me the other day, which I couldn't answer, but you being the finance guy in this discussion can, maybe. It's, you know, who's the bigger contributor to inflation? Is it government or private sector?
Wow. That's just a kind of complicated economics dissertation that you just dropped into the conversation.
It is, but I don't think it's a trivial pursuit to find out. You know,
well, what do you mean? Do you mean government in the sense of printing money? Or do you think government in the sense of inequality?
Yeah, government in the sense of printing money and spending money, paying social all of the functions that government has in spending, you know, and printing.
Right.
What it can spend. I read somewhere, like a little quote about, if you think that printing money solves poverty, then you'll soon believe that printing degrees solve stupidity. Something along those lines. So the situation is a big question mark. I'd love to know our unique root cause, because your logic is pure and universal. But I think we've got our own tricks here, as probably every country does,
about the
real drivers of inflation are.
I mean, and it seems to keep changing. That's what I find so interesting about inflation, is that the causes of inflation vary over time. Because there was a time when government printing money or an oversupply of cash into the economy was the given cause. You know, almost all economists accepted that this was the given cause. But of course, with quantitative easing, it's not quite the case. And this last bout of inflation is, you know, also that each inflation rise has its own, you know, rather ephemeral set of causes. It's fascinating. Keeps you on your toes. I like it.
Yeah, and it does get personal. You know, if you start looking at the demographic profile of aging of the world, you're going to start thinking very differently about how you're going to fund yourself after you stop earning money. Okay, when you got a lump sum that's meant to fund you for the remaining years of your life, because those remaining years used to be, you know, like 5 or 10 or something like that. They're now 20 or 30.
What's your estimate of what you should have at retirement in order to live a comfortable life from there on in?
Something inside me told me you were going to ask that question. And I'm thoroughly unprepared for the answer. Okay. Because here's the thing. You know, so here's the thing. I don't think there's an answer. I think the better question, if I might venture such a bold comment, the better question might be, how much do you need to continue with your current lifestyle? Because it's a different number for everybody. Okay.
Yes.
So the real question is not how much does a person need to survive for, you know, 10 to 30 years, but how much do you need and how much of your lifestyle have you banked?
Right.
And how much have you spent?
Right.
You know, and that's where this whole two-pot thing, I think, is going to lead people astray, because they're going to pre-spend money that they're not going to be able to earn back later. And so I think all of us, particularly those of us who are not that young anymore, have to sit down and kind of, you know, extrapolate whether we've taken enough of what we've earned and put it aside for where we're not going to earn. And I'm almost prepared to bet that 90% of us haven't.
Yeah.
If you want to continue the lifestyle.
So one of the reasons I'm asking the question is because I was asked as the finance guy in our office, I was asked what the number is. And I said something between 10 and 20 million bucks. And they were like, what? Are you kidding me?
I think for middle-class
South Africa, so it's about there.
I think for a middle-class South African, that's about right. That's about right. That'll keep you. Yeah, I think that's not far off, but that's a scary number to say in the public domain, my friend, because 80% of the population haven't got that, and they're not. And so that just highlights the stark inequality of expectations and earnings and all of those kinds of things. So you, for the time being, can't solve that as a number. You can solve it as a sum of your previous behavior that can fund your future needs. And that's it's an equation. It's not an answer. It's an equation.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. The news of this past week was Floyd Chivambu leaving the EFF and joining MK, but doing it somehow with a nod from Julius Malema, very curious sort of odd situation. I don't know what conclusion to draw from that. I mean, what conclusion do you draw from that?
Well, it was an odd and a tear. I'm trying to find, as you asking me to, the root causes for all of these movements, because I don't think we're done.
Okay.
Yes. And one of the conspiracy theories, which I sort of played around in my head, was this was a plan kind of for an MK-EFF kind of loose tie-up, you know, which would give them together with the ANC, you know, a majority rule again. The other one is that they really did just fall out. The other one is that someone's got to rescue MK from its self-implosion. You know, I just don't know. And what I'm trying to figure out is the root cause, which it seems to me across all appointments, political, in government, you know, whether they're at municipal level or whether they're at government level, are to stay in the job, you know, and to retain as much power as possible.
My father used to say that there was only two rules in politics. One, get in. Yeah. Two, stay in.
And so these political allegiances and parties are curious in their substance, in as much as people will join up with each other, transfer between one another and to one another for the single purpose, it seems to me, of retaining power. And they will negotiate deals all focused on retaining power, whereas my hypothesis has been that political power must be used to appoint expert execution. That's the bridge that we don't seem to be able to cross. It seems to me that once you're in power, you have to appoint all of the people that sort of backed you to be in power to actually do the job. And that's where I think the whole thing falls to pieces. So, you know, that was a very simple answer to your question, don't you think? I don't know, man.
I mean, it is interesting how allegiances in politics seem to be in a big state of flux all over the place. The other thing that I draw out of this, and it's, you know, I've been thinking about the American election too, is about momentum. How important momentum in politics and what happens when you lose it. And it just seems to me that the EFF has lost momentum. And this is what happens when you lose momentum is that, you know, people start drifting away, the internal problems sort of start coming to the fore. You can see the decay, you know, you sort of sense the decay. Everything seems pro forma. The kind of spirit of the organization seems to use its edge.
Yeah, in a way, this is just kind of normal politics. We are used to dominant politics. We have had 30 years and before then, any number of years of single party dominance. Okay.
Yeah.
And so we are not used to this game that, you know, that is being currently played. And maybe all of it is just an acclimatization to a new order, which doesn't entrench anybody. And that, in and of itself, has got to be a good thing, I would have thought. Yeah. So I think we must expect more, and I hope that what emerges is some sort of fabric knitting capacity and some sort of, you know, I see more and more, maybe it's just because we've got more and more knowledge, I see more and more state capture things being caught out, despite losing evidence and losing this. And I mean, I don't know, I read that Junisa was accused of something, and now they can't find the records. You know, that's just part and parcel of what of corruption. But more and more, the water level is lowering, because there's not one person at the tap, okay, to keep filling it up. And so we're seeing more, and maybe it's a good thing, Tim. Maybe it's a good thing.
Yeah. I remain to be convinced.
Yeah, we all do.
Yeah.
My focus has moved away from central government, because I really don't understand it, to local government, you know, to municipalities. And I've had some interest in watching this Johannesburg, yet again, change of the guard. And nothing's really changed, you know. We've got a mayor who, it was previously the MEC Finance, who says boldly that Joburg is in a sound financial position, and then appoints the ex-speaker as the new financial director. And I kind of started thinking about what size of a company Joburg is. And Joburg is like bigger than your mid-sized listed company on the Joburg Stock Exchange, okay?
Sure. Yeah, of course.
In terms of its income, it's way inside the top 40, if not higher.
Yeah.
And so we are appointing a financial director who has got no knowledge, apparent knowledge of finance, as the financial director of one of the top 40 companies in the JSE. Okay.
Yes.
Now, when you start drawing those kind of comparisons, the bleakness of, you know, of appointing mates to positions of influence becomes pretty stark. And the absence of knowledge of numbers. I mean, I was listening to Lesufi's State of the Province speech, well, extracts from it and comments on it, should I say.
Right.
And one comment he made rather glibly was that, don't worry, Gauteng has got 137 billion of new investment coming its way via global banks and food companies and et al. That's a lot of money. And then in the very next voice, he says that, you know, much of the investment that would have come into Gauteng has gone into the Western Cape. So I worry about the soundness, the foundation of our municipalities. And last point on them, who are, I read yesterday, collectively owed 347 billion rand between, you know, people that they provide services and don't pay them, and amongst the people that owe the money and haven't paid it is National Treasury. Well, that's pretty small, 18.6 billion or something. It's damn difficult to imagine a world where municipalities are going to be rescued without some significant, deep strategic and financial planning and direction changing. And if we can't fix things locally, we ain't going to fix things nationally.
No, you're right. I mean, if there's anything that demonstrates that your finance department is lacking, it's unpaid bills. Because, you know, you can just imagine somebody, you know, in the Joburg City Council, you know, waking up on Monday morning and going through the mail, you know, you go through all of the letters that you've got and you see how many letters you sent out here.
That's if you've got any mail.
And then you do a little sum. Okay, what we were owed is this. What we got was this. And it's time for lunch. Oops. Yeah. But at the end of the month, you're like, the numbers don't mean anything anymore because they're so enormous.
It's so difficult. It's too big. It's just too damn big. It's like flying in an airplane. When you look out the window, it's too high for you to comprehend, so it's not scary. Okay. That's the truth of it. So anyway, I'm worried about it. Okay.
No, it's true. I mean, and how widespread the problem of not payment is. And the key here is not being paid by national government. I said, you kind of understand. Poor people struggling to pay their electricity bills in in South Africa's township. So it's not the best situation. But what's very difficult to understand is, you know, the national government owes a municipality a certain amount of money it doesn't pay. I mean, how does that happen? How do the people in local government not notice?
Again, it goes back to where we started, which is keeping your job is more important than getting it right. Okay. And so, you know, Tim, life is the sum of bad and good habits. Okay. And this becomes a habit. I mean, even those of us, and I include myself in that list of people, I pay my bills immediately. I get them. You know, I don't wait for the 30 days because you may as well, man, and then just get it over with, you know, if you can afford it. Okay.
Right.
Now, if my neighbors stopped paying their bills and got away with it, there has to be a point of inflection where you go, why should I pay?
Exactly.
Because you don't have to pay. It's for free.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. And then that's when this thing becomes endemic and a habit and an almost accepted habit. Anyway, and yet, as we said in the beginning, the JSE storms ahead. Interest rates are coming down. Life is great. Okay. So we're just finickety, man. You stop being so fussy and, you know, looking at the truth like this. I mean, come on. Get with the program, you know.
What's the difference between investing and speculating? Should you time the markets or spend time in the markets? What is risk and why spend so much time managing it? Why is compounding considered the most powerful force in the universe? And why is time one of the most important elements in the compounding formula? Learn these and other key investment principles from one of the best in the industry. In his book, Time in the Markets, Dave Fuad, founder of Fuad Asset Management, shares anecdotes and experiences earned over decades immersed in the markets. Valuable insight that will have you investing successfully for the long term. Download your free copy of Time in the Markets from their website, fuad.co.za, that is F-O-O-R-D. And while you're there, look out for Fuad Industries' first Teach Your Child to Invest picture book series about saving and investing. Fuad Asset Management, investment stewards since 1981 and pioneers in foundational financial literacy.
Can I raise this at a completely different topic? Well, it's not different, actually, yeah. Because it's about having drinks after work.
Oh, those were the days, my friend. I thought they'd never end.
Yeah. Do you think that, you know, it's one of the characteristics of modern office work, yeah, that drinks after work don't happen in. Throughout my working life, I used to go and have drinks after work. And it seems it happens everywhere. And I just wonder if there is a measurable effect as a sort of cogency of your work group is affected by this change. It's quite a big change, actually, if you think about it.
I think it's huge. You know, I used to run a treasury operation of traders and things of that nature, and you could measure how hard we'd worked by how often we needed to gather afterwards. Okay. I mean, if you'd had a really tough week, but you'd done well and you'd survived the week and so on, you'd gather. Yes. Okay. And so that's the first point. The second point is that, you know, where would we gather everyone from? No one's at work. Okay. So you can't go, hey guys, shall we just head upstairs for a quick one and then I'll see you at the blah, blah. Okay. And that just doesn't happen anymore. I think the consequences, the absence of social interaction at work, lead to all sorts of things, including an absence of understanding of what's happening in your working environment, including an absence of culture of the organization. I think it's going to come back and bite us. I was in the basement of one bank last week, which was full. And I'm aware of another bank, which is starting to say, you will come to work. Okay. And so people, I think, are enforcing this trend because they can start seeing the disconnects that are happening. And of course, people, as you can imagine, take advantage of this. So someone sort of plugged into the, you think they're at work on the online, but they're nowhere near online. And so, yeah, I think it's time that COVID's over, in as much as I can say that statement with confidence. And it's time to gather. It's time to build. The essence of success starts with common culture, common purpose, and teamwork. And the absence of that is going to pay. It's going to pay.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah. But it's interesting, you know, sort of vaguely on that same line. A survey was done recently, and I forget exactly where, but it was, to investigate the common understanding that old people are lonely. Okay, right. So they interviewed a whole bunch of people who were over 70 and sort of said, you know, are you ever lonely, even sometimes, blah, blah, blah. And then they interviewed a whole bunch of people under 25 years old. And guess who were the loneliest of the lot? It wasn't the oldies.
Right.
Okay. The oldies were gathering as they had become accustomed to having these organized sort of, you know, whether they come together to play bridge or square dance or whatever they might want to do. But the 25-year-olds who for the last 5 years haven't really gathered in the workplace socially were much more lonely. And social media is not a solution to loneliness. That virtual community is a driver of loneliness, in my view, because you can switch it on and off and you can get ghosted and you can. So that surprised me. We always think of lonely old people. We've got lonely young people, Tim. That's a big issue.
It's extraordinary. All righty, Mark. Well, that's the stuff that's happened this past week. Thank you very much.
Have a good one.
Cheers.